Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live from our Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us in the 8 o'clock hour from 8 to 8:30. Talking all things NFL, and Joe speaking in the NFL, how much quarterback movement do you think we're going to see this offseason? There's obviously the Justin Fields situation in Chicago with Caleb Williams presumptively going to be the number one draft pick there with Justin Fields moving on. There's Kirk Cousins as a free agent. There's Russell Wilson in Denver. What do you make of this quarterback market heading into the offseason? How much quarterback movement we could see? I mean, there's the Pittsburgh situation, which I think is really intriguing with Arthur Smith coming in as the new OC, and apparently they're not very high on Kenny Pickett, nor should they be based on what they've seen the first couple of years there. So how do you view this quarterback market and the movement that we could see this offseason?
Yeah, I feel like it's every year now that it's like, whoa, this is going to be amazing. This is going to be intriguing, but it's just – I think we're going to have very few boring off seasons in the QB market. You know, maybe at some point everyone's pretty happy with where they are, and you see some stability, but you're not obviously never going to see it league wide. And you just got some really fascinating situations this year with, I mean, I guess you start at the top of the draft in the Justin Fields thing. I think at this point, everybody would be shocked if the Bears traded out of there and stuck with Justin Fields, right? What's the percentage Yes. chance of that happening?
I mean, personally, I would put it at about 5%. It's probably a little higher than that, but I don't think it's very likely at all that they hold on to Fields.
Right. So then it's who trades for him. I mean, here's an interesting little side question that goes back to Jared versus Joe on that, which is apparently Caroline Willie Demas, according to Jared, they all said they would pick Justin Fields over Will Levis. So there's a lot. This is a heavy Will Levis disrespect show. So I disagree with that. I also would say if you asked me to bet a lot of money on which of those two will end up having like the more productive career, I would probably have to go with Justin Fields right now because one, he has a head start, and I think he's good enough to be like Will Levis could absolutely be better than him. I don't know. I still like Will Levis could go. There's a huge range of possibilities, right? I think Justin Fields is going to be a starting quarterback in the league and an intriguing one and a talented one and a pretty good one, but it's hard for me to see him being great. But if that's the case, then what NFL team is trading for him and what are they trading for him? Are the Bears going to get like a good enough return?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's also, I mean, this is the offseason where they got to pick up his option, right? So the fifth year option has to be picked up. If you're trading for Justin Fields, are you willing to commit to giving him an extension? Because I'm not. Like, I've seen a lot of Justin Fields, and I am fully aware that the team that he was on around him was terrible. And the receiving corps, for the most part, was terrible. They brought in DJ Moore last year. And he was good, but you know, from coaching, from a roster standpoint, he didn't have a whole lot of help around him. There were also plenty of games where Justin Fields himself was not very good and did not throw the ball well at all. So, like honestly, like Will Levis, I can tell you right now, Will Levis is already a better passer than Justin Fields. It's not particularly close in my mind. Now, Justin Fields as an overall player, like a couple of years ago, Justin Fields, I mean, what did he run for? I mean, he was over 1,000 yards, wasn't he? I mean, he was a game breaker that way. And he ran for 1,100 yards 2 years ago. So that was a big part of his game and a big part of the threat that he was. He could still be that. And look, I do think if you put better weapons around him, it's not like he's incapable of throwing the ball, but I'm with you. Like, who exactly is that team going to be? Like, if you're Atlanta right now and you're down on Desmond Ridder and you're kind of in between quarterbacks, are you wanting to go the Justin Fields route? Would Russell Wilson at this point in his career be more appealing to you if you're a team like Atlanta? I'd throw Pittsburgh in there too. Like, apparently the reports are they want competition for Kenny Pickett. Well, does Justin Fields fit that mold? Would you rather bring in somebody else? Like, does competition mean Ryan Tannehill, a veteran quarterback that way? You know, what exactly do you mean by competition? And what are you willing to give up? Like, we talked with Charles a few months ago, and they were talking about the Justin Fields situation, and you know, the return was not especially large for a guy like Fields. So if you're Chicago, I mean, if you're drafting Caleb Williams, you got to trade him. Like, you got to get rid of him. But how low are you willing to sell on Justin Fields?
Exactly, because I'm with you. If I'm a, you know, the team trading for him, like I mean, I'm probably looking at, you know, it's like I mean, you're gonna try to do the, I guess eventually the Kirk Cousins thing and tag and you know and see if he can be as good. But if that's how you feel about it, then are you giving up a second round pick, you know, for him? I mean, I don't think he's getting a first rounder, right? I think everybody could
No,
agree on
no.
that. But I bet you the Bears, you know, are counting on a second rounder. If you're a team giving up that much for him, like, you know, and that, but then you're not going to like extend him, then what does that say? You know, like
Right.
they don't, those things don't really go together. It's going to be really interesting. And that sets, and like you said, there's the Russell Wilson thing out there. There's the Kirk Cousins thing out there. I do think Tannehill, you know, ends up somewhere, or like you said, he's like the probably like the veteran with a chance to steal a job kind of thing, you know, and that's like for him, that's where I think he's got to be, you know, he needs to be in a place with a vulnerable starter. And then you've got the various teams out there, like the Broncos could be, I think they are looking to get a new quarterback. Obviously the Patriots are, you know, what are the, I mean, I assume the Raiders are, right? I mean,
I
they've got
assume.
AOC, but I think so. And then, you know, the Steelers are really interesting. Now the Tannehill thing to the Steelers has basically been dunked on here in the last few days, which is also interesting.
It is. What do you think? Do you think Russell Wilson is a starting quarterback in the league next year? It's clear that Denver wants to move on from him, right? Like that's become pretty obvious. So I
Yeah.
would be surprised if they just roll it back and he's out there for Denver again next year. Is somebody willing to make Russell Wilson their starter next year at this point in his career? Because I do think the team that you brought up there that's probably most likely would be the Raiders, right? Like that seems to make some sense.
Yeah, it's just, it comes down to obviously that particular team loving him. I can't think of too many players who have done, not necessarily they've done, but has seen as much damage done to the rep of a player as we've seen in 2 years with Russell Wilson, between his play, but also just all the, you know, former teammates and stuff bashing him and everything about how he is. Like I feel like 2 years ago when that happened, as you recall, I know the moment it happened, I was like, oh my God, the Broncos are back. Orange Crush, you know, like, I mean, I thought it was a ridiculous move from Seattle. And so what we've learned since then, a lot more helps explain, you know, Seattle situation. So I just, between all that stuff, and then just the fact that he appears to be diminished as a player, I mean, I think a lot of his game is just the broken play thing, you know, and he's, look, he's been tremendous at that, but it's just, take, if that, as that gets, okay, here's a wild analogy, but it's like we talk about Soros, you know, his explosiveness, his athleticism makes up for his lack of size, and it's such a weapon for him. So if you lose a little bit of that, you know, like in traditional ways, you're like, eh, you're fine, but you're not great, you're not elite. I'm not saying that's happened with Soros, but I mean, that's, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I think that could be the story with him as he advanced in his career. And Russell Wilson to me just looks like a diminished player, along with all the other stuff that goes with him. So my answer, after going through a yet another word salad with you, is no.
Well, the other thing, he's 35, right? And I know everybody feels like since Tom Brady played until he was 45 years old, 46 years old, that now everybody can do that. And the answer is no, they can't. Like people do diminish and people do fall off the table. And look, Russell Wilson, you know, by the numbers, depending on which ones you want to look at, did have a bounce back season last year. I mean, look, he was terrible 2 years ago under Nathaniel Hackett, and that's a big reason why Nathaniel Hackett was one and done after like 15 games or whatever it was in Denver. You know, he did throw for 26 touchdowns and 8 picks last year. Now, I mean, they averaged 6.9 yards per completion, so it's not like they were throwing the ball down the field. So I will say yes, he is a starting quarterback, and I think the Raiders is where it's going to be. Like, the Raiders kind of feel like they're in no man's land right now with the quarterback position, and I'm not sure they're going to be able to land their guy in the draft. So I will a bold prediction. The Raiders is where Russell Wilson will be playing quarterback next year.
I like it.
Some revenge against the Broncos.
Well, some revenge against the Broncos. And then so let's get the Broncos bringing in JJ McCarthy, and then he can be division rivals with Harbaugh.
Boy.
How about that?
I like it.
Can we do that?
I'm all for it. 615-737-1025, our phone number. What do you make of the quarterback movement that we could see this offseason? Do you think Justin Fields should be a starter somewhere? Do you think Russell Wilson should be a starter? And of course, we'll get to Joe's boy, Kirk Cousins, coming up next as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Let's get to work. Yes, Jalen.
I thought this was the dress rehearsal.
Dress rehearsal? Big Kirko wakes up dripping like this.
Kirk. I like it, Kirko.
You like that?
Big Kirko, I'm loving it.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. The more Kirk Cousins acting we can get to Rex Road, the better off I think we're all going to be. And Kirk Cousins, very interesting name, scheduled to be a free agent in Minnesota. He's coming off the torn Achilles. And look, think what you will about Kirk Cousins, and we've talked about him plenty on the show here before. I think he's done a very good job in Minnesota. And prior to his injury this season, he was playing really well. I mean, he threw for 2,300 yards, 18 touchdowns, 5 picks, 7-5 an attempt, and was completing 70% of his passes before the torn Achilles. So, I mean, there were people talking about him at the time, Joe, in the MVP race. That's how well he was playing before he got hurt this year. He's also 35. We were just talking about Russell Wilson and his age. So what do we think the future looks like for Kirk Cousins? I still think Minnesota and a return there with Kevin O'Connell makes the most sense probably for both sides. So that's what I expect to happen this offseason. But do you think Minnesota could view it differently? Could they be looking for a younger quarterback to try to get younger at that position? And if so, if Kirk Cousins does hit the market, how attractive of an option do you think he is to teams out there at this point in his career?
Well, I think he's definitely going to be somebody's starting quarterback next year. I mean, he's playing at a high enough level, to definitely make that happen. It's really interesting now, but you are coming off an Achilles, and he's also mid-30s. So, like you said, Brady kind of changed the calculus on that, but you get to your mid-30s. I mean, I think we saw with Ryan Tannehill, as hard as it is to kind of cut through the muck of all the just awfulness around him and how things just eroded, I think we saw a little bit of his age here in the last couple of years, right? Just a little bit less athletic and things like that. So, and that's not Cousins' game at all. I mean, that's the thing with Cousins. As we've talked about, Cousins to me is very comparable to a guy like Jared Goff, where give him a clean pocket, he'll pick you apart all day, but give him some issues and put some pressure in his face, and he really struggles with that. I have no idea, you know, how the Vikings are looking at this, you know, because I do feel like Kevin O'Connell and Cousins have a good thing, but you can make the case like it's time to change it up and go get the young guy and take it. And they've tried to bring in guys who haven't worked out at all, but they haven't gone high to try to do that. So, and if he's not back with them, if they don't get a new deal with him, who would be after Cousins?
Well, I mean, look, I think if you're Atlanta and he gets the free agency, I feel like that would be a great fit. Like, if Kirk Cousins made it to free agency with the roster that they've got there, and look, the roster's not elite, but, you know, you got Pitts, you've got Drake London, you've got Bijan Robinson. Like I think if he made it to free agency and they got Cousins, Atlanta, you know, maybe I shouldn't say this. I was going to say they'd be immediately the favorite in the South. Maybe they wouldn't. Tampa Bay with the Bake Show down there played really well last year. But Kirk Cousins,
Right.
I think with Atlanta would be a pretty good fit.
Yeah. What about what about Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, I think he'd be a good fit too. I mean, and that goes back to the competition part, right? Like, is Pittsburgh just totally out on Kenny Pickett, or are they wanting to have a good veteran option behind him in case his play starts to go poorly? Like, are they willing to just go ahead and pull the plug on Kenny Pickett? And if so, is Kirk Cousins at this stage of his career the guy you pull the plug for? I think that's a little bit more of a little bit more of a different. Like, I think if he made it to free agency, Atlanta would be a no-brainer for him from their perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. That's why I thought Tannehill actually was perfect. Tannehill to me is the perfect. We're not totally out yet on our recent draft pick, but here's a guy who probably takes his job, you know.
Right.
But I don't think Cousins, you know, like you got to be to me out of them to invest in Cousins like that. And I just don't know. There's also the teams that we assume are going to be, well, you mentioned Russell Wilson to the Raiders. You know, there's the Raiders, you know, like the Patriots. Patriots, we assume they're gonna draft, I guess, probably Jaden Daniels. But you know, that there's any of those teams could also instead say, no, I love Cousins. Let's trade out of there and give him as much help as possible. I mean, clearly, like 1-2, like Commanders are gonna take Drake May, and the Bears, I think, are going to take Caleb Williams, or somebody's going to jump into one and take Caleb Williams. But then after that, I think any of these quarterback teams we assume are going to draft him could also opt for, you know, like a Cousins instead, if you really believe in him. And I mean, shoot, I don't know if it was going to come to pass, but if things had gone differently for the Niners in this postseason, they would be an obvious discussion here too. They're not anymore, and I don't think they should be, but I think they would have been possibly.
Viking Matt says, I do like Cousins, but I'm not paying him that much money. This is from Viking Matt on the text line. So Viking Matt not willing to retain his own quarterback, ready to move on if the cost is that much. I mean, the going rate for him, like the going rate for a quarterback under a new deal right now. Like, what's Cousins getting per year if he re-signs in Minnesota at his age at 35?
What was his last deal? I mean,
Yeah, it's pretty.
you got a fully guaranteed 30 some AAV, right? I mean, or like
Yes.
30 some a year, something like that. Yeah, it's an interesting question because, you know, like, I mean, I guess I would probably, I mean, I might pay him more for less term kind of thing, you
Yeah.
know, with like a new, like I guess low 40s. I mean,
Yeah.
that's the thing. I mean, if you're negotiating on the other side, you're like, dude, you just tore your Achilles. I'm not going to say this out loud, maybe, but you can't move already, you know? So, like, is it really worth that much?
Well, I guess he's technically, is he technically under contract, but he's got those voidable years? Because I don't think he's technically a free agent till like 2020. Well, I guess it is this year. There's the out, but
Yeah.
you could bring him back and pay him a ton of money. I mean, I think he's worth it. I think at this stage of his career, like, are you going to find a better option? Particularly like if you're keeping Justin Jefferson and paying him his next deal, like you want a quarterback that can help you. And look, are they going to win Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins? Probably not. But what are the realistic options this offseason where they are? Unless they can get themselves, via draft capital to move up, and maybe they make a push for a Jaden Daniels, or I guess maybe if they love a Michael Penix or a JJ McCarthy, you could go that route. But I guess that's the only other option, is do they love one of these other guys like a Penix or a McCarthy that they're just willing to move on from Cousins after that?
Right. And you know, if you have Cousins and you're paying Jefferson, listen carefully, kids. Then you're gonna lose out on some players because of the cap. You are. Like you just you can extend it to a certain point. You can kick the can to a certain point. You're gonna have some mid-range players that you're gonna say, yeah, like you gotta shed that, you know, is gonna hurt your roster. Is it critically important. If you draft well, then you're fine. You know, I mean, you can be fine there, but that's where you have to decide if you want to invest that much, you know, in two people. But I mean, when you talk about if you believe in him, and I certainly think Justin Jefferson, I mean, I can't believe that there'd be any talk of the Vikings not giving him a second deal. There has been talk of it. I can't believe that. I think he's about as good as anyone, you know, when he's yes. healthy. So, but that's the argument for the rookie is now you can do a lot more things elsewhere on your roster. And, you know, it's not like this team is necessarily ready made for the Super Bowl at this point.
Well, we know if Joe Rexroad was the GM in Minnesota, Kirk Cousins be getting a 5-year deal.
Maybe lifetime guaranteed. Like Steve Young, by the way, Steve Young, you're the best quarterback in Niners history.
Here we go.
I think the LA Express, when he signed with the USFL initially, I think they gave him like a 20-year deal, like $1 million a year. It was something crazy like that. I'll have to Google it. That's what I do for Cousins.
Kirk, you can be my quarterback as long as you want to, man.
$1 million.
Got our next big game for the Preds tonight in LA. We'll get into that and some more buzz out there about UC Saros as well. All that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
What percentage of the phone calls you're taking right now or making have to do with the goalie, and how much of it has to do with other parts of the roster?
Percentage? I would probably other parts of the roster is probably 90%.
Which would leave 10% for Saros?
Yeah, that's probably as accurate as I can be with you right now.
It was Barry Trotz with Jared Stillman the other day for his weekly visit on Stillman & Company. Again, I will never get tired of that clip. It was awesome.
Jared, I tell you what, he gets right to the math of the deal, man. I tell you. The underlying deeper numbers. Jared's got his finger on the pulse.
Good stuff there. So 90% of the conversation is apparently about other parts of the roster. Preds back in action tonight, taking on the LA Kings. By the way, we'll have Preds Pick to Click coming up later in the show at 8:45, so make sure you're tuned in for that. So big game for the Preds tonight. If you can win this one, then all of a sudden, Joe, you've beaten Vegas, you've beaten LA, and you're staring down the barrel of San Jose and Anaheim in a back-to-back setting coming up this weekend. So you win this game, the mind starts to wander of, all right, could you finish this road trip off with a really impressive road trip against two of the worst teams in the NHL coming up this weekend? But business to take care of tonight before you can get to that point. Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, who I believe is scheduled to join Caroline Willie and D-Maze today, so make sure you tune in for that at 1 o'clock, put out his 32 Thoughts written edition last night. And a couple of interesting notes here about the Predators that I want to get to. Number one, here's what he says about Tommy Novak, another under-the-radar center. Novak, unrestricted. The Predators want to sign him, but it's a unique salary case because there are so few comparables. He could score 43 points in 51 games last year, heating up with 4 goals in Nashville last 5 games. If they can't keep him, there will be interest. He's making $800,000. So an interesting note there on the Novak front. Friedman also says, when it comes to UC Saros, there was a time it was 99% certain that he'd stay in Tennessee. Now, people who know better than I do think it's closer to 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly, obviously, who he's referring to when he says, you know, people who know better than I do, but saying it's closer to 50-50. That's the first time I've heard him or really anybody else use that phrase. So, yeah, it's basically a coin flip as to whether or not UC Saros is still going to be here in Nashville as the goalie.
Well, look, I mean, I think it tracks with the way Barry Trotz has talked about this through the course of the season, doesn't it? And I mean, the only math I know is 90-10 that Jared got us down to, you know,
we need
the
more.
90-10. Yeah. But I mean, Barry Trotz was emphatic about, I'd say emphatic, pretty clear about seeking that extension, talking with his people and everything. And, it's just, yeah, I think publicly, because internally, I think that there is concern about UC Saros. I wouldn't say it's like there's like this freak out, like, oh man, he's on the downhill. But I think that there is some questions internally about Soros and what he's going to be over the next few years and whether it's worthwhile to give him that kind of money. And it's totally reasonable. I mean, it's a really tough situation. But also, I think that a Soros performance is part of that too, right? It has to be. Like, just he has been consistently, I think, impressive, and all the traits that everyone saw in him when he was drafted. Like, I mean, he's putting that to pretty good use on the ice, right? Not consistent, of course, but pretty freaking good. So, but I mean, I think that Friedman is speaking into his, well, whoever is telling him this, it seems like around the league, right? People are kind of understanding, like, Soros is there for you if you want him.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, again, 50-50 or close to 50-50. That's the first time I've heard, I guess, that number get thrown out there. So what does that mean? Does that mean 50-50 at the trade deadline? Does that mean 50-50 as next summer rolls along? Like, you know, a trade doesn't necessarily have to happen now, but it is interesting, and I think it's clear to your point that this is becoming way more of a discussion and way more of a tough decision than perhaps Barry Trotz thought it was going to be heading into the year. Like, Barry Trotz was pretty strong heading into the year about their intentions with UC Soros, right? And we've talked about this dating back to the draft last year and the reports coming out that Askarov was involved in some trade conversations. Like, it was pretty clear which way the Predators were leaning this time last season. And look, you understand why, right? Like, UC Soros was unbelievable last year. We've gone over the numbers and how much of a catalyst he was for the team down the stretch. It's changed this year. And I think with more information coming out, it's clear to see that Trotz, I don't know that his mind has totally changed, but he's way more open to this than perhaps most people thought he would be heading into the season. And I find that really intriguing. Now the question is there a team out there that gets desperate enough with their goaltending situation where they say, you know what, even with Soros having a down year, we've seen the highest level of what it can be. And if we can get it to the highest level of what it can be, that could be the difference in us winning a Stanley Cup and not winning a Stanley Cup. Is there a team that's willing to pull that trigger at a price that is close to what Barry Trotz is looking for? And look, I think it's also pretty clear, Joe, that the price has been very high for what Trotz is looking for in return. Is there a point where you're considering this, if you're Barry Trotz, where that price has to start to come down a little bit? And are we getting to that point? I don't know.
I think you hit on it. I think at some point, you know, you have to look at this situation, and obviously he has all the information on what teams are telling him, but so I don't know how far away anyone is. Is anyone even in the ballpark? I have no idea. But I think you may be onto something. I think you may have to lower your price a little bit, because it's just, I mean, ultimately you're going to lose leverage over time, right? And that's a great question. What team out there that can win the cup would plug in Soros, and that might actually be the difference?
Yeah, look, New Jersey's been a team that's come up. Carolina is still interesting to me. You know, LA, who they're playing tonight, is, I mean, they've had Big Save Dave leading the way the last couple of weeks in net there. So, I mean, look,
just
he's
keep
done
the pipeline going to
well.
LA.
Yeah, just keep funneling goaltenders to the Kings. But I mean, those are some names. Those are some teams that I guess you immediately think of. The other part of this, though, is like these type of deals with goalies that are in their prime don't really happen at the deadline. Like, there's just not a lot of evidence, not a lot of comparables that you could point to here. So I think that's also what makes this deal, if it were to happen, really difficult to predict, like, exactly what the return would be, just because you don't see it very often. Like, everybody thought last summer that Connor Hellebuyck might get traded from the Jets, and then they signed him to a 7-year deal, and that was that. And you just, there's not really a recent comparable with a goalie that's 28 years old in the prime of his career that you can point to that's been as good as Soros has been. So it's a really strange situation that way. What do you make of the Novak part of what Friedman had to say and what that could look like for the Predators here? Like, if you're Barry Trotz, are you trying to get him? And let's take Friedman at his word that they want to bring him back. If he's not signed by the deadline, are you moving him? If you're Barry Trotz, if you've not been able to come to an agreement?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's the thing, because he could bring a return. But the thing is, I just hate the idea of anybody with offensive skill moving out who's young, and it's still not like he's going to cost a ton. So that's one of those, to me, it's kind of like the internal feel on for him, too, in terms of wanting to be here, you know, because I think he's worth having as part of your future somewhere in that lineup. Am I wrong?
I'm still not convinced of that, but I don't, I mean, you're not wrong. I need to see, I'd love to know what number is he's asking for, because it's one thing if you can get him signed to like a $2.5 million contract. It's another thing if Tommy Novak wants $5 million a year. Like, those are, it's wildly apart. And to Friedman's point, like, there's not really great comparables for him either, because he did put up 43 points in 51 games last year. And he did get off to a good start this year. And he does have 4 goals in his last 5 games. He's also gone through a stretch this year, albeit, you know, partly related to injury, where he was a ghost offensively. And there's just not a ton of body of work, just purely game-wise, that he's played in the NHL. So he's a really difficult one to figure out exactly how much he's worth from a dollar amount standpoint.
What if I told you guys that his camp have had some conversations with Nashville? That would make sense, right?
Well, I'm sure they have. I mean, at this point, if you haven't had conversations.
Yeah, if not, then you're in trouble. Yeah, right. Like, if not, then that tells you that it's a problem.
That I can't tell you for sure.
I would like to point out that 30 years ago, I was super excited at the trading deadline, exactly 30 years ago, when the Red Wings traded Tim Chevalier and Dallas Drake to the Jets for Bob Asenza the final piece in a cup run. Anyone who's old enough and follows the Detroit Red Wings knows Bob Asenza lost his job in the first round to Chris Osgood, and they lost to the San Jose Sharks 8 seed, beating the 1 seed. Sorry that I even brought it up, but I'm like there's very few examples of goaltenders at the deadline, so it is the lack of comps is also makes this even more intriguing.
Now Dennis on the text line says, "Are you saying the price for Soros has to drop like concert tickets an hour before the show?" It's from Dennis on the text line.
I hate you, Dennis. I love you, but I hate you. And I hate Jim Diamond, too. Jim Diamond really got me good yesterday.
He did. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rob Rant, and I'm mad at Joe Rexroad. I'm mad at the world after the news yesterday. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
NCAA, you're bad. You're going down.
I do think you should be pretty nervous if you're a Vols fan about the way that this is all appearing to transpire.
I didn't agree to this crap.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program, either the Rex Rant or the Rob Rant. And I just had to take things over today because I'm here to be mad at Joe Rexroad. I'm here to be mad at all of these people who have been clamoring for college football playoff expansion and have been clamoring for a 12-team playoff. And the downfall of college football as we know it is rapidly approaching. And we've had our discussions about the 12-team playoff. I hate it. I hate the idea of expanding to 12. It is what it is at this point, so I've stopped worrying about it. It's going to be a 12-team playoff. I've accepted it, and hopefully it works out for the best. And yesterday, I'm scrolling through my phone, Joe, and I see this come across my screen from On3 Sports. Quote, news, the idea of changing to a 14-team playoff was discussed by the College Football Playoff Committee today, ESPN reports. This change could come as early as 2026. When I tell you that I almost became physically ill and threw my phone down, I am not exaggerating. These people and the just destructive warpath that they're on for the almighty dollar that is just going to absolutely torpedo everything about college football and what makes it great and what has made it great is just so discouraging and so disturbing to me. We have not played a single down, not a single down of a 12-team playoff yet, and they're already talking about expanding to 14, which means they're going to expand to 14, and they're not going to stop there. They're going to keep going. It's not going to be good enough, and we're eventually going to get to a point where we've got like a 24-team playoff at the end of the year, and it drives me absolutely insane. It's going to be such a watered-down, ridiculous product where we're watching Tulsa take on Ohio State in the first round of the playoffs, and it's going to drive me insane. We've not even gotten to the 12-team playoff yet, and they're already talking about expanding this thing to 14 because 12 apparently is not good enough. It makes me sick. It makes me physically ill, and I am so upset with you. I'm so upset with everybody who wants this 12-team playoff garbage and has allowed this thing to get rolling downhill the way it has.
What I do?
You just like it.
No, man. I look, right now, I'll sign up for the BCS. Go back to the BCS. I'll do it.
I would
sign up right now. My problem is the four team, and I was wrong because when it happened, I'm like, okay, that's good. Like you don't need a fifth team. You're gonna get your national championship worthy team among four. Do that. But the problem is, and I mean, like, I'm part of the problem for sure, is then that all that anybody cares about is a playoff now, right? But you're right. This is pure greed and idiocy, and this is the Big Ten and the SEC is what this is.
It's exactly.
The Big Ten and the SEC want three or four auto bids, and they're so huge now. They got the Big Ten's 18, the SEC is 16, so they need more playoff, more auto berths for their leagues. Also, they haven't figured out how they're going to split the money among all the leagues. Like, you know, the NCAA, you get like a unit for every win in the NCAA tournament for your league, right? Well, they haven't figured that out. It's an absolute mess. And look, Greg Sankey is a very smart commissioner. He's done things that have helped the SEC win. The SEC is winning because of Greg Sankey. Also, Greg Sankey is a problem here for the greater good of college athletics. And maybe calling him out in particular isn't totally fair, but like let's look at a balance. Let's have a balanced look at what this means for college football. You know, it's great for the SEC, and that's what his job is. But when he went and took Oklahoma and Texas, that's a big part of this whole story. And now it's like you got the Big Ten, SEC have all the power. The other leagues have nothing. They have no leverage, but it's just a bunch of infighting and griping, and ESPN's pissed off, and they, you know, it is an absolute mess.
Yeah, and look, regardless of how you feel about the 12-team playoff, what really boggles my mind about this, Joe, is can we not wait and see how the 12-team playoff goes for a couple of years before you start immediately trying to expand? Like, can we not have a little bit of runway here to see what the 12-team playoff actually looks like before we immediately try to just go ahead and add on to it? Like, the fact that they're already talking about this, and that we know, as we discussed yesterday, the 5-7 format where five highest-ranked conference champions and then seven auto bids, that's only a two-year deal. So it goes through 2026. So the fact that that's only a two-year thing tells me that when 2026 rolls around and they're trying to determine this format moving forward, the fact that they're already bringing this up, it's going to go to 14. So you're going to see a two-year 12-team playoff, and then we're immediately going to get into a 14-team playoff after that without having seen one bit of shred of evidence how the 12-team playoff goes. It boggles my mind.
Yeah, well, the problem is they just did the two-year deal, and now they're doing TV negotiations. That's why, right? So the whole thing is – like, but everyone assumed it would just be okay, and they'll just sign up for more, and there we go. But instead, so I'm reading Stuart Mandel's column, The Athletic. So, you know, past decade, SEC Big Ten, ACC Big 12, Pac-12, they've all had the same amount of CFP revenue, right?
Yeah.
And that last year, that means everybody got $79.4 million, okay, to split up. Well, now there's two, and they are not going to take the same amount as anybody else. So it is greed, for sure. And it's also, you know, it's just that then it's the greater good of the sport just being sacrificed for, again, these two leagues that are just taking over. And I mean, you know, I never have bought the idea that it's like those two are just going to break away and create a little mini NFL, like not officially, but if this goes the way that they want it to go with like 3-4 auto bids and they get way more money. I mean, it does become two leagues, and then everybody else. And that's just bad for the sport. I'm sorry.
So where does this end? Like, where does this conversation ultimately stop? Because look, clearly it's about the money, but they're always going to be looking for more money. You're always going to be looking to add. You're always going to, I mean, these people in charge are always going to be greedy when these decisions are come up. So where does expansion end? Like, is there, even in the midst of that room right now, is there a number in the back of their mind like, well, guys, we can't go past 24. Like, we can't get past 24 at some point. I have no idea. I have no idea where this ends.
Well, I mean, so the teams that don't get a bye in a 14, how many games? Help me with math. I need my mathlete Stillman to help me with the math on this. How many games is that in a playoff for those players?
Look.
So that's four games, right?
I think so.
You don't get a bye, right?
On Plus top maybe of a conference championship.
Yeah. Right. So there's five and then 12. So there's 17 games. And right now, all this revenue they're talking about, they're not accounting for the, and that is a big thing that we need to understand here too. Greed, absolutely. But I do think there's some thought of like the players are going to end up getting a cut. The courts are going to make it so the players are going to have to get a cut, right? So we need more to handle that. But that's another aspect here. You're asking these non-pros to play 17 games just like the pros? I mean, that's – so. But to answer your question, like, I don't think it can go much bigger than that. I mean, you're already – like, I think with 12, we're going to have some good playoff games, right? We're going to have some terrible ones, but we always already have had some terrible ones in the four. We're going to have some good ones, but I think you're at some point you're just adding more bad games.
I'm physically ill. It hurts me even talking
I'm
about
sorry.
It.
Dude, I'll go back to the vote. Let's vote after the bowls. The Big 8 and an independent playing the Orange Bowl and the Pac-10 and the Big 10 playing the road. Let's do that. I'm with you, man.
Amazing. It is amazing they used to do that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get into all things NFL with him for the next 30 minutes. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.